Support for this program by the Alaska Native Heritage Center. Experience more than 10,000 years of history and culture through art, dance, film, and more. Exploring your home state is the COVID-safe way to enjoy the summer.
Welcome to Native America Calling. In Anchorage, I'm Alyssa Yakyadi London. A recent study finds patients prefer to see medical professionals with the same cultural and racial perspectives. But Native people are underrepresented in the medical field, adding an additional hurdle for Native people seeking care. The good news is there are several efforts underway to recruit Native doctors and nurses, and they're showing results. We'll hear about it and discuss what those interested in a career in medicine might expect. That's coming up right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Indian Health Service is taking over the Oglala Sioux Tribe's ambulance service. The federal agency says low staffing was putting patients from the Pine Ridge Reservation at risk. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Ariel Zients has more.
Santiana Yellowhorse always knew she wanted to serve her people. So the 24-year-old became an EMT with the Oglala Sioux Tribe ambulance service. But Yellowhorse became frustrated with low staffing and other working conditions that impacted the team's ability to help patients. Yellowhorse says there were only 16 medics and 5 ambulances serving 40,000 people spread across nearly 2.5 million acres. Sometimes only one or two ambulance crews were working at a time.
I just know that the people were at a greater risk, and it was really hard to see because you come into this job, you want to do the most for everyone.
The Indian Health Service agrees. It told the Oglala Sioux Tribe it was taking over its ambulance program because patients were at risk. The IHS says the ambulance service was unable to respond to 172 calls last month. Patients delayed care, drove themselves to the hospital, got a ride from a police officer, or took an expensive medical helicopter paid by the IHS. Kevin Keller is the president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe. He says this is the first time he's heard concerns from the IHS about an imminent threat.
You know, it was definitely an unexpected surprise, and it's forcing us to evaluate our legal options available to us.
Killer says the IHS is responsible for low staffing since it controls funding. The IHS is hiring, and Yellowhorse says she's excited to apply. For National Native News, I'm Ariel Zients in Rapid City.
Clean water standards are tied to a variety of factors, including the average amount of fish consumed. A Southeast Alaska Native group is partnering with a tribe to try to find out how much fish coastal Alaskans actually consume. KSTK Sage Smiley reports.
According to a state formula used by environmental regulators, Alaskans only eat one bite of fish per day, 6.5 grams, or about a fifth of an ounce.
Which is a piece of fish, maybe the size of a quarter.
That's far too little, says Fred Olson Jr., the executive director of the environmental advocacy group, the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission. Alaska uses the fish consumption rate of 6.5 grams per day per person as part of its water quality standards formula. If Alaskans do eat more than 6.5 grams per day of seafood, Olson says, they could be exposed to higher levels of potentially harmful substances than the state accounts for. Other Pacific states like Washington and Oregon use a number more than 25 times higher.
And so we're just trying to see or show how much people eat. And we figure it's more than 6.5 grams a day.
So the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission, a consortium of 15 tribes, recently received a federal BIA grant for $130,000 to further investigate how much seafood the indigenous population in a coastal town like Wrangell consumes day to day. It will work with the local Tlingit tribe, the Wrangell Cooperative Association, to survey households in the community about their consumption of seafoods. Esther Reese is the tribal administrator of the Wrangell Cooperative Association. She says the tribe is excited to be working with SEITC on the survey.
Well, it's basically going to be an avenue that continues to help protect the environment, bring more focus on safe consumption of foods.
Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation, which regulates our air and water, says it's working to update human health criteria, including the fish consumption rate. I'm Sage Smiley.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme. The Indian Arts and Crafts Board promotes Indian artists of federally recognized tribes through its online source directory. Information on this no-charge opportunity available at doi.gov/IACB. Who support this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. A disproportionately low number of Native American physicians are graduating from medical school and working in the field. That's the discouraging news from a 2018 study published by the American Medical Association. Researchers point to inadequate recruitment efforts for medical schools as one of the reasons. At the same time, a number of surveys find patients preferring interacting with healthcare professionals who look like them and understand their community and culture. The Native doctors we have on today's show will talk to us more about that, and we'd like to invite you into the conversation as well. Do you have a Native doctor that you see? Are you or someone in your family currently going to medical school? Call in and tell us about it. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, our first guest today is Dr. Mary Owen. She's the current president of the Association of American Indian Physicians. And she's the director of the Center of American Indian and Minority Health at the University of Minnesota. As a disclaimer, I want to acknowledge that the Association of American Indian Physicians is a current financial contributor to Native America Calling's parent company. Dr. Owen, thank you for being on the show today and being a fellow Tlingit. So welcome back. And I just want to begin by hearing from you why you don't think there are enough Native people in the medical field. And why are we so underrepresented?
Thanks for inviting me back, Alyssa, and thanks to my parents for making sure that I was Tlingit. Regarding why we have low numbers, you've hit on it in part. We don't have enough recruitment, but it's even much deeper than that, right? We don't have. I think we need to go all the way back and look at our graduation rates. Just look at the pool of people who are available to become physicians, and we're not graduating enough of us out of high school and then college to feed this larger number that we need to want to go on to medical school. And then when you enter the medical school, not only are we not recruiting enough, but we're not supporting students enough with what they need. We're not reducing some of those barriers in medical school. For instance, a lot of Native students miss their tribal communities when they come. You know, our school has been doing this for 50 years, and one of the most common complaints that we hear is that from people, not complaints, but issues that students face is that they are so far from their tribal community. So it's critical that any school that attempts this builds a community for those students to enter. So we need to increase the numbers of students who are coming through the system. We need our kids graduating at all levels of the educational pathway. And then we need to increase supports for those students as they move through each piece of this educational pathway. And schools, if they're going to recruit more students, need to know how to do that because we're not like other students, right? There are different factors that are important to our students. One, do they see themselves in the curriculum? In my school, we now have required Native health curriculum, 9 hours of it for all medical students, not just the Native students. Do the Native students have a place to keep them safe when they're experiencing things that are difficult in the curriculum or in the class? You know, we know that racism still exists in medical school. Do they have support if they're struggling? Are they able to access tutors? Are they able to see, again, other physicians who look like them? Lots of different factors contribute to the problem, but I'm glad that you're airing it airing this issue. You know, each year we graduate 20 to 40 Native physicians out of a total of 20,000 physicians who graduate. So it's a monstrous program. We also know that our students are the ones who are more likely to go back and work in our communities than others. And when areas like the Bemidji area, for instance, sees a 46% vacancy rate in the IHS clinics, as was nicely highlighted on that little segment from the news before the show. So huge issue, lots of work to be done on getting our students to where to enter and successfully navigate the pathway. Thank you.
Thank you. What inspired you to become a doctor?
Walking into my clinic and wanting us to be involved in all facets of leadership within that clinic. Actually, it was in the Indian Health Service, ANMC Hospital down in Anchorage. And recognizing that I didn't see any of us as people who were making the decisions and feeling kind of lonely in my own clinic. I remember standing in a hallway one time with a cup of urine waiting to be taken to the next step and just feeling like invisible again in my own clinic. So I just thought, this has got to change.
Did you grow up in Anchorage and grow up
story, but the truth. What's that?
Did you grow up in Anchorage and grow up going to the Alaska Native Medical Center?
No, I went to my own clinic in Juneau, the Search Clinic.
It started
out as public health service. Yeah, and I was up there after college to I was working for the Alaska Alliance for the Mentally Ill up there and getting my health care there.
And for our audience, SEARCH stands for Southeast Alaska. Can you help us out?
Regional Health Consortium.
Regional Health Consortium.
Which is, I ended up actually working for 11 years with Full Scope Family Medicine after graduating from medical school. So my goal was to get back and serve my clinic, which is, I know, the goal for lots of us Native physicians.
Which is the hope in graduating Native doctors is so that they would actually go back to the community as you did. So do you mentor Native students and talk to them about this type of path?
Now, my program is about recruiting Native students into medicine and then also, like you said, mentoring them, making sure they have all the tools they need to succeed. But a big part of our program is involvement in the entire process. So we have a program that is called a PAW pre-admissions workshop for any student in college who's interested in medical school. We do a two-day workshop that highlights the admissions process, the interview process, the questions you are likely to be asked. Students do a mock interview. They practice. We talk about the MCAT and the scores that are needed to get into medical school and how to navigate all of that. So that's one piece. And the next step where I'm really involved is on admissions, and I think that this is key. If we don't have Native people on these admissions committees, there's not much chance, I think, of them fully understanding what it is that our students are up against, for one. Another is finding the students who are truly committed to our communities. Because most schools don't require that you have any proof of Native commitment. So the stakes are so high for medicine that people want to get in, right? And so sometimes we'll have people who might say they're Native, but they don't have that commitment that we're looking for. My school's really looking for a commitment to serve, not just that you're Native. And it doesn't mean that you have to go and work in our communities, but you at least have to mentor or do something that helps our communities. Otherwise, what's the point, right? So if we're on admissions, we can help other people understand that need and the students that we're looking for to meet this mission. And then not only mentoring, but providing the tutoring and critically providing community for students. Again, students miss their tribal communities, miss their family, so we try to recreate that with other students, and not just with medical students, but reaching out to any Native pharmacy students, reaching out to students in the undergrad who are part of the American Indian Science and Engineering community, and reaching out to people in the community, for instance, the Duluth Indigenous community here in Minnesota, and also the American Indian Community Housing Organization, any place that we find Native students to try to recreate a form of community for students, and then as well as providing traditional things like beading or teaching drum, whatever students are asking for at any given time.
Given that so much of our population, American Indian Alaska Native population, lives off the reservation or outside their village community, what kind of conversations are you having with those types of students that, again, didn't grow up in their homelands, what kind of conversations are you having with them so that they will return to their homelands and practice medicine?
Well, you raise a really good point, a couple of points there. One is we're not going to convince anybody that they need to return to a community because that's a decision they have to make. We talk about the pros and cons. I returned to my own community, which for me was incredibly powerful because I knew the families, but it can also be difficult because of family politics, as those of us who are from these communities understand. So you have to make that choice yourself. To serve seems obvious to me. And again, if you're part of our program, I'm hoping that you're coming in interested in serving in some capacity, whether that's even if you become a neurosurgeon, but you're mentoring students, you're still serving, right? If you're mentoring mm-hmm. Native students. So you can serve our communities in lots of different ways. It doesn't have to be by direct service, making that clear. The other conversation we do have is, you're right, so many of us have now been raised off of our tribal lands. And we have to have the conversation with the students who have been raised off, the different experiences of having been raised on, and what that lack, those lack of services, those higher social determinants of health, and how that might impact Native students who are from those communities are less well-served, although that can also happen in urban areas for Native students. So we have that discussion, and it's a really important one because this is not just about race, it's also about class. And I understand that we're not a race, we're a political group. I get that. But just in terms of this conversation. So students have to, I have to bring students to a mutual space or help to try to get to a mutual space of understanding where the others are coming from, whether that's by class or by more involved in our tribal ways and tradition. There's a lot of navigation because you can imagine we get a wide spectrum of students.
And also as they navigate, you know, what schools they want to go to, are there any schools that allow, you know, free medical education or more support to Native students than others?
Yeah, that was something that I just learned. There is a school that I believe Michigan actually has, you know, I'm touting another school, but I believe Michigan actually extends their free tuition in medical school, although someone would have to look that up. I know a lot of our schools have high scholarships because we recognize the need. Again, my school's been doing this for 50 years, so we offer full-ride scholarships to some Native students if they qualify, and I think other schools are doing the same. We do have our first Native medical school in Oklahoma, which is pretty exciting. It is a doctor of osteopathy. I think I pronounced that right. John can correct me if I'm wrong, or Dr. Bean. But it's pretty exciting. You know, Native people get to lead not just a piece of the curriculum, but they get to lead the entire, are involved and consult on the entire curriculum. So very exciting.
That is very exciting. We're going to have to go to break, but we're going to talk with our guests like Dr. Owen more about how we can recruit more Native American students and Alaska Native students into the medical field. This is Native America Calling, and we'd love to hear from you today. So you can call in at 1-800-996-2848. You can also reach out on Facebook at Native America Calling or on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back.
Here's a taste of Dene musician Klee Benong's performance art intervention.
These are the defining lines, drawn like borders across my life. These are such desperate signs.
It's called appropriation, and it's a stance against cultural genocide. We'll hear more about it on Native America Calling's September Music Maker with Klee Benong.
Confronted by authority.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a no-charge, 24/7, confidential and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the Chat Now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This program is supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Alyssa London. We're talking about what it takes to recruit more Native medical students. If you work in the medical field, what were the most challenging and rewarding parts of that educational journey? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. If you have questions for our guests about what it takes to be a doctor, call in and ask. We're also at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, before the break, we were speaking with Dr. Mary Owen, the current president of the Association of American Indian Physicians and the director of the Center of American Indian and Minority Health at the University of Minnesota. We were talking about how challenging it is to bring American Indian and Alaska Native students into the field and getting to and starting to think about ways that that could be changed, and also her own journey of going back and serving her community. Oh my goodness, after medical school. Now we're going to also bring into the conversation Dr. Jonathan Baines. He is joining us from Rochester, Minnesota. He's a family physician with the Mayo Clinic, and he's Tlingit and Tsimshian. So we have three Tlingits speaking with you today, me, Dr. Owen, and Dr. Jonathan Baines. Welcome to Native American Calling, Dr. Baines.
Oh, thank you for having me back.
Thank you. So what inspired you to become a doctor?
Well, I learned in early high school a love of science and applying it, and it just so happened at the time my brother was going to medical school at the time, so I realized that was a possibility. I'd leaned towards science, however, and doing research, and it wasn't until I got into my freshman year of college that I found out that you could do both. You could do research and practice medicine. And you get dual degrees, so they have combined degree programs called MD-PhD programs. They sometimes go under the medical scientist training program, an acronym, but they're a combined degree program. So that's what I decided to do, was to pursue MD-PhD.
And what were some of the, I guess, highlights of that path? That took probably a decade, right?
Oh, you hit it on the nail, yes. It was exactly a decade. Highlights, I think probably the biggest highlight was the birth of my daughter during that time, to be honest. Youngest daughter, Rihanna, was born during the MD-PhD program. Already had her daughter, Rachel, so being a parent in the combined degree program had its own challenges. Fortunately, had a very supportive wife and a supportive school to help me get through, but it was long. Normally, MD-PhD is roughly 8 years, so not 10, but had a challenge. My first principal investigator that I was doing the graduate studies with decided to leave for industry, so I had to switch labs and get a new project and essentially restart most of the PhD over again.
Sounds like a lot of persistence and determination, and that your daughter brought you a lot of joy. We have a caller, Maka from Saskatchewan, Canada, listening online. Maka, do you have a question or a comment for our guest today?
Yeah, I have a comment to maybe encourage Native students to go into the medical field. My daughter's from the Tsimshian Dene tribe up in way northern Saskatchewan, and she's now working as a naturopath in the Indian health system. And this was brought into the Indian health system in 2013. So she works side by side with the allopathic doctors at the clinic. And so if a person is interested in a more natural medical approach, this might be a path of study that some of the students might want to look into.
Thank you. Thank you for that comment. Dr. Owen, can you speak about naturopath opportunities in the medical field for Native students?
Yeah, you know, we have students who have gone down the naturopath, and there are a couple of really good schools. So there's definitely it's a lot of us allopathic doctors are trying to encourage traditional medicine, although naturopathy is not necessarily traditional medicine, but trying to encourage and support our students in whatever choices they make as far as their health care. So we are not recommending one brand, so it's good to have that knowledge of other forms of health care, and certainly naturopathy provides that, so support it.
Thank you, and thank you to our caller, Maka, and thank you for the answering that or commenting on that, Dr. Owen. We have another guest or caller. We have Melvin calling in from Santee, Nebraska, listening in on KZYK. Melvin, do you have a question or comment?
Yes. You know, during the pandemic, the beginning of it, and we were getting those shots, I really, the first time I noticed that we didn't have any Indians as doctors, nurses, or techs. You know, and I was going, why is this happening? And I asked my niece, I said, I thought you were going to school, pharmacy. She said, Uncle Man, you know, going to school there, we didn't have much science classes. She said, matter of fact, one year they cut off science, and because of budget or something. But she said, that put me behind, because you have to have science to be a pharmacist, nurse, or doctor. I really encourage all our schools to bring up the academics and skill levels so that our kids can compete in these places. I've noticed a lot of the kids come back from college because they're not quite keeping up. But the other part was, like they said, they were lonely. They wanted to come home. There were a lot of reasons for it, you know. That when I went over to Brown University to check on their program, they had this group called the, like, 10, 12 of them all went together and encouraged each other. So that might be something people could look at. Thank you.
Thank you, Melvin. You brought some really solid points. You talked about the loneliness that can be felt by going away from your home community to medical school, and then also sometimes the lack of preparedness, especially in the sciences, when to even be ready to go to medical school. Dr. Baines, can you talk about or speak to some of the community that you may or may not have felt amongst other American Indian and Alaska Native students when you were going through school? And can you also speak to the preparedness or the lack thereof when you entered school, into medical school?
Yeah, sure. You know, he brought up, you know, some really, really good points. There are certainly ways for the listeners out there who may be thinking of the pathway but feeling they don't have the science background. First, medical schools do not require a science major, so you can be any major that you want. You do have to have a few basic science courses that are required to enter medical school, but they're limited, and certainly support is available to help with that at just about any college or university. In addition, if you don't feel like you've had enough science background and want to pursue more education, a lot of schools now are doing what's called post-bac programs, where you have it's a post-baccalaureate program where you'll have a year or two to get additional training, a lot of times research experience. And these are often used as a way of improving the competitiveness of an application. So I don't want the listeners to feel that if they don't have the science background that it's out of reach. Certainly not. There are certainly ways to get that, and those are being increasingly those methods are being increasingly utilized. Of course, I know Dr. Owen talked about reaching back to younger and younger ages. I would think back that I think one of the problems we're having is folks back as young as toddlers aren't getting exposed to Native physicians. And by the time the kids get to high school, they're just not thinking of being a doctor because they haven't seen a Native one. So we're certainly working with AIP to change that. Now, for myself, I was, you know, you talked about being urban. I grew up urban, and so I was fortunate enough to have that. I lived 5 miles from Arizona State University, so I was fortunate enough to get the science background I needed, but certainly it can be acquired later for those that didn't get it early on.
Thank you for that. Melvin also brought up a point about the pandemic and how that was a time when he really noticed that there were not that many Native American physicians. From your perspective, Dr. Baines, what did the pandemic teach us about the need for more Native people in the health field?
Oh, it just really brought it into the light that there are not nearly enough Native healthcare providers in general, not just physicians. We need more phlebotomists, pharmacists, nurses, which is why I think a lot of our pre-health programs are really counting success when students enter any health career. It doesn't really matter which one. We just love helping students get into health careers and find the one that suits them best.
Thank you. Dr. Owen, another thing that Melvin touched on was about the loneliness that students can feel when they go off to school. Can you share with us more about some of the ways that you're trying to create community among Native American students when they're pursuing their goal of becoming a physician?
Sure. I do want to mention, though, that that AAIP, Association of American Indian Physicians, is sponsoring a workshop on October 25th and 26th to develop regions for the pathways programs for our students at all levels of education. And you can find out more information at our website, which is caimh@d.umn.edu. So it's addressing this just exactly what Dr. Baines talked about, that really we need to be starting this educational process prenatally, but we can't do that. So we can go back to kindergarten and continue it through practice till our practitioners are in place. And so Melvin brought up two incredibly important barriers. As far as the community, I hear from students oftentimes when particularly when the studies get really hard, that they wish they had their community members to turn to help boost them up and remind them why they're doing this, but also just for some familiar companionship, right? So because they oftentimes don't see other people who look like them or remind them of their traditions at schools. So that's what I was saying. We have to build that community, which is what we do in my school. We connect students with each other, with other undergrads who are Native, with community members who are Native, any way we can to build that community. But he's absolutely right. It's very difficult to have to leave your home. That's another point of this regional health consortium, our regional pathways program, is to try to get people trained closer to where they are, because they're the ones who are more likely to go back and work in those areas, right? Instead of, you know, training Alaskans in Minnesota, even though we do a good job of it, you know, we're going to have better odds of hitting those vacancy rates if we're training Minnesotans or Bemidji area students in Bemidji area.
Yeah, good points. Everyone wants to feel like they have a support network and are reconnecting to their why when they're going through the inevitable challenges that come with attending school and becoming a physician. Now, speaking of attending school, we have a fourth-year optometry intern as a guest on our show today, calling in from Phoenix metro area in Arizona is Katie McCray. She is Navajo, and welcome to Native America Calling, Katie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being on the show today. And what inspired you to study optometry and become a physician?
So this started way long time ago when I was younger. As a young individual who got all my care taken at an Indian Health Services in Crown Point, New Mexico, you're constantly seeing dentists, you're seeing optometrists, you're seeing physicians, you're seeing physical therapy for sports and all of that. And that was honestly one of the great ways that was kind of getting an understanding of what each profession was like. One consistent health professional that I had was Dr. Stephen Glover, who was my optometrist for a very long time. And, just with the four opter and everything, that was so captivating, and just being able to get me to see very well every year and stuff. And I noticed that, you know, there weren't many optometry, Native American optometrists. And I wanted to be, you know, someone different and was like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I love what he does. I really appreciate vision in general. And so that was kind of when I decided, like, yeah, you know, I haven't seen a Native Navajo optometrist for that matter. And so decided to pursue that. The more that I got inspired by that, kind of looking into it, and it just seems like a very well-rounded profession to be able to still do everything non-invasively, but also just helping people with vision and being able to still see their overall health just by looking at the back of their eye.
That's so encouraging to hear you going after your career goal and to hear the story of how you even chose to pursue that in the first place. Just you recognize that there weren't enough Native American optometrists and you wanted to help fill that gap. What are some of the challenges that you face and also some of the, you know, awesome things that you're experiencing in your journey?
Definitely being very one of like the very few. I know currently right now, shout out to the other two students. There are also two other Navajo students who are currently fourth years as well. And so they're also from the New Mexico area. But yeah, I think, you know, being one of the very few optometry professional students is kind of what's been the challenge, because, you know, you're trying to have all these different conversations of what you're going through, the rigors of the curriculum, the rigors of clinical education and all that. And, you know, it's different in its own way because of the amount of physics, amount of optics that's, you know, not the same in, like, say, like medical school or like physicians. You know, there's a different type of rigor and criteria that you constantly
Thank
go
you, Katie.
Through.
I want to hear more about this after the break and also speak to our other guests, Dr. Mary Owen and Dr. Jonathan Baines as well. If you'd like to join our discussion today, call in at 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Every day, we tackle issues from a Native viewpoint. And if you'd like to listen to...
Support by the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian, presenting The Other Slavery, Histories of Indian Bondage from New Spain to the Southwestern United States, a virtual symposium that considers the hidden stories of enslaved indigenous peoples, focusing on the legacy of Spanish colonization in the Americas and Asia and its impact on what is now the Southwestern United States. Available on demand from September 24th to the 27th at americanindian.si.edu.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm your host, Alyssa London, and we're focusing on the medical field as a career. The medical professionals on our show today say we need more Native doctors. Do you agree? There's still time to join our conversation. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, the guests that we have on our show today are Dr. Mary Owen, the current president of the Association of American Indian Physicians and the director of the Center of American Indian and Minority Health at the University of Minnesota. We also have Dr. Jonathan Baines, physician with the Mayo Clinic, and a fourth-year optometry intern, Katie McCray from the Navajo Nation. Katie, before the break, you were talking to us about the positive aspects and the challenges of pursuing your career becoming an optometrist. Can you finish your thought, please?
Yeah, so I was just kind of alluding to the fact that, you know, each profession is unique in its own way, and it has its rigors and challenges and stuff. And being Native American, you know, it increases that because you're the only one at the school, for that matter, or you don't know if anyone identifies as American Indian or Alaskan Native, which is kind of the case at the school that I attended. You know, we, on paper, you know, there's about 16 across our school. And I come from a school where there's 10 different colleges of health professions. And so you don't know where they are, and you don't know, you know, who they are, what they look like and stuff. And so that was kind of hard to connect with people in that way. And so I was fortunate enough to connect with a mentor who was from the College of Dental Medicine, and he was Ojibwe and Kaskaskian. So that was really nice to have that kind of support in looking for mentorship and kind of relating, you know, our Native cultures and how we integrate that into our curriculum into our daily lives as students and a faculty member.
Thank you, Katie. Another individual I want to bring into our conversation today, joining us from Baraboo, Wisconsin, is Dr. Amy DeLong. She is a family medicine and adolescent health physician for the Ho-Chunk Nation and a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation. Welcome to Native America Calling, Dr. DeLong.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Can you talk to us about your education? What were some of the challenging parts and also some of the parts you really enjoyed?
Sure. I'm going to give big kudos to the University of Minnesota Duluth, where Dr. Mary Owen works and serves as the director of the center, just because they reached out to me and recruited me. I had taken a year off between undergraduate and medical school just to apply. I needed to work to afford all the applications. And when I saw on the map where Duluth, Minnesota was, I decided not to go there. But the director at the time had just made a phone call to me and said, you know, if you fill out this secondary application, I promise you, you'll get an interview. And like others have touched on, as Native students, we're often the only Native student in even minority programs. So when I went to Duluth, I had an interview with a Native physician, and it was only the second Native physician I had ever met in my life. I had lunch with five other Native American students who were from around the country. I was completely blown away. The other aspect was I went, Mary touched on this too, I went to the University of Michigan where I grew up most of my life, and they did have a tuition waiver for Native students who were state residents. And that was huge for me as a low-income student and coming from a basically a blue-collar family. So I grew up in a suburban area. I was a Navy brat, and I had always come back to Wisconsin for home. Both my parents are from Wisconsin. And so all along, I knew that I wanted to come back and come home and work for my tribal community. But unlike some of the people here, I was a young adult. I was probably a freshman in college when I decided I wanted to do pre-med. And everyone has touched on some of those aspects, the lack of preparedness, feeling alone and far away from my family for the first time when I was in Duluth, and also the importance of having that tribal and that community connection. The other thing that the University of Minnesota did is they had us do these three-day clinical programs as second-year students. So I think if I had not gone back to my tribal community for those 3 days at a time in my life where I really felt like giving up and quitting because of the rigors of medical school and being away from family, that I would have dropped out. But I went back and I was refreshed by being exposed to what medicine was truly about, the connections I had with the people I was there, the family support. And thankfully, I come from a family who is always very, education is so important. It really kept me on track. So I just want to say that those are the aspects that kept me going were fellow Native students, the support of the Center of American Indian and Minority Health, the recruitment. I mean, it was a phone call. And this is before cell phones. And the importance of those community connections during your schooling, because it keeps you grounded, it keeps you focused on what it is you truly want at a time in your life when you feel defeated at times. It's a competitive environment. And again, I can't say enough about the support I had as a Duluth student. And I'm happy now. Go ahead.
That's very encouraging to hear about all the support that you had. And I want to know, why did you then, or did you always know that you wanted to return back to your community and work and practice medicine in and for the Ho-Chunk Nation? Was that always the why?
Yep, I did. And I'm I did not, like I said, I was a Navy brat and I grew up away from my tribal community. We came back, right, for holidays, Easter, Christmas, summers, but it was never where we lived for any length of time. But it was always home. That Wisconsin was always home. And I think as a Navy brat, I wanted to come back home. I wanted to stay. You know, I knew what it was like to travel, but I wanted to stay and build roots and raise my family in one place and have them be close to their grandparents and their extended family and their culture and their language. And I get all of that by being here.
Well, it sounds like you were the ideal candidate that Dr. Owen was touching on, that they're trying to look for people that have a commitment to returning to their community and serving the fellow people in their tribe. Dr. Owen, we talked about res dogs a little bit before we started the show and the episode about the Indian healthcare system. Can you talk about what's the truth that's in that and then also some of the things that maybe not be as representative?
First, hi, Dr. DeLong. Great to hear you. She was also a classmate of mine, so it's fun to be able to connect. You and I both laughed at it because we saw some truths in it, right? The experience of feeling like you're waiting forever for your appointment. That the other piece that was really funny, I thought, was that connection. Everybody knows everybody, right? So there's that concern that some of our patients sometimes have going into our clinics. But what I also liked was just the sense of familiar and familiness, even through all of that. That was connection that they had with the clinic. You know, it was, and I really try to get that through to my patients that these are our clinics. We are the people who should be making the decisions about these clinics and getting more involved to make sure that they are meeting our needs. Sure, there's some frustrations, but again, they're ours, and we just have to make them fit us the way that they need to fit us and do what we need them to do. So.
Thanks, Mary. And then can you expand on what Amy was saying about the simple gestures that make a big difference in the clinics?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
You know, I called you Mary and Dr. Owen.
It's okay. Yeah, I love what she had to say there. I had the same mentor reach out to me. Well, actually, he didn't call me personally like he did with her, but meeting with him was enough to convince me to go to medical school because he talked to me in a way, you know, he was, like she said, the first Native physician that I saw as well. Or the first one I saw, and he spoke to our rights to health care and our rights as Native people to access and be the physician or go to medical school, get this education, and bring it back to our communities. He was so pro-Native, and I knew that he would empower me and help me get through this difficult education that she talked about. So that's what I try to do for our students. If it takes a personal phone call, like when they get accepted, admissions lets me call the student, tell them they're accepted, and encourage them to come. If we have someone that we know we really want to apply to school, we'll do the same thing. We are small enough in community that it doesn't take that much work to reach out individually to those students individually.
And Katie, you've heard from Dr. DeLong and Dr. Owen about these simple gestures that have gone a long way when they connect with students and, you know, encourage them. Have there been any things that have happened that have inspired you along your path and encouraged you to keep going?
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned before, I had connected with one of the faculty members. You know, he was in a different profession, which was dental medicine. But still, you know, we connected on being kind of in the Native American, one of the only Native Americans within our school that we were at. And also I had reached out to one of the vice provosts who had always been very supportive and stuff. She's always had this program that was at our school, which was called the Pomona Health Career Ladder Program, which also had another entity with it, which was the American Indian Health Career Ladder Program that I connected with her. We would reach out to students out of in Sherman Indian High School to have them come to our school and do these little programs where we would introduce them to different healthcare career programs. And then also we had another school from the LA County, which was one of the indigenous schools from, which is called Anahuacameca, which is a mainly Mexica indigenous-based school. So we had that kind of connection where it was always something that brought me back to community. It brought me back to inspiring someone who, you know, where they always say, like, you always want to be someone who you wish you had when you were going through your journey and stuff. But these people, like, her name is Dr. Elizabeth Riga and Dr. Bradley Henson, have always been my support team in there. And, you know, just kind of venturing out from what you have in your school system, you always have your family support system. My family's been amazing through this all, like, you know, from my mom all the way down to my niece and nephew and everything, and just kind of always having that background and that good support to continue on this journey that I'm currently on.
That's great that you've had such amazing support and that helps you continue along your journey. Dr. Baines, what advice do you have for current Native medical students?
I think the thing that I see that leads to success is it's funny, it's relentless failure. What we see students do is practice. They get up in front of folks and they'll present patients, or they'll present a case, and then they get immediate feedback on what they didn't, you know, that wasn't perfect about the presentation. And then they do it again, and they do it again, and they get perfect. But it's that willingness to stand up and try and accept the feedback, I think, makes students so successful, because they learn so quickly from the feedback that they get. So for med students, I'd say practicing that relentless failure, stand up, step out, take a chance. Say, hey, I'd like to go see that patient, or I want to go do that case, or, hey, can I start the incision? Can I close? Taking a chance on those things, and they will flourish.
That's some great advice. Dr. Owen, what kind of support or Native scholarships are available for prospective Native medical students? And, you know, sometimes a barrier to actually going to medical school is how expensive it is.
Well, that's a really good point. I want to add one thing in addition to what Dr. Baines just mentioned. Besides the tenacity, I think the other thing, our students sometimes tend to want to get embarrassed about how they're doing, and they don't connect with others. And I have to remind them that medicine really is a team sport. We're doing this together. So connecting with others as they progress through and finding out where others are, and they'll be surprised to find out they're not the only one going through whatever it is that they're dealing with or who is not understanding something. Regarding the financial aid, you should look at AAIP.org. It's not just financial aid, but different ideas on ways to get to medical school. AAIP.org, Association of American Indian Physicians will connect you or let you know about different pre-admissions workshops that are going on. And within those pre-admissions workshops, we talk about some of the financial aid issues that you'll deal with, ways to, apply for a it's not called a waiver, but when you apply through the Association of American Medical Colleges, you can get a fee waiver so that you don't have to pay all the same costs. You'll find out about tricks like that. And you'll also find out about different scholarships that are available. And each school is going to have its own set of scholarships as well as the national ones that are available through American Indian Scholarship Fund, I believe it's called. So that'll be one start. And then from there, it just continues to branch out. And again, making sure that you're contacting the schools that you're applying to. And when you get accepted to the school, it's important to ask them right up front, what kind of financial aid can you offer me? You know, start that negotiation skills early.
Thank you, Dr. Owen. So in summation, everyone, there's a will, there's a way. We need more Native American doctors. So please pursue that career path if you have any interest. We have reached the end of the hour. I would like to say thank you to our guests, Dr. Mary Owen, Dr. Jonathan Baines, Katie McCray, and Dr. Amy DeLong. Join host Tara Gatewood tomorrow for another live show where she welcomes the September music maker, Klee Bainali, and she'll pronounce it way better than that. I'm your host, Alyssa London. Thank you so much. This is Native America Calling.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to them that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet, and I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.